Well, I do have somewhat of a humorous story to share with you this week, even though I don't like telling jokes under the circumstances. It's kind of related to the topic, so I thought that I would share. There were these two little boys. They were twin brothers, about 7 years old, and they were the absolute terrors of the neighborhood. They got into trouble, not every day, but multiple times every day. And they refused to listen to mom or to dad. They were disobedient and just really out of hand, and it brought the mom to tears. And so she went to the minister, and she shared what was going on, and she says, I'm at wit's end. I just don't know what to do with these boys of mine. And the minister said, would you like me to come and talk to them? And she said, oh, Reverend, that would be so great if you could do that. So the next day he showed up at the house, and as she answered the door to greet the minister said, on my way over here, I had a thought. Perhaps it would be better to talk to Tommy and Billy separately. And she said, whatever you think, Reverend. And so he sat down in the living room with Tommy. And he started off by saying, Tommy, where is God? And Tommy was just staring at the minister, didn't move a muscle, didn't say a word. And so with a little bit more emphasis, the minister again said, Tommy, where is God? And again, there was no response, just a blank stare. So with even more emphasis, the minister said, Tommy, where is God? And with this, Tommy's eyes swelled up as big as pies, and his chin started to quivering. And all of a sudden, he just jumped up and ran out of the room to the bedroom where his brother Billy was. And he crashed through the door, and he said, Billy, we are really in trouble. Someone has taken God, and they're looking to pin it on us. Earlier this week, my granddaughter, Ella, who is 16, and incredibly delightful, by the way, dropped over for a few minutes. And during our chit-chat, she observed that the year 2020 would go down as one of the most incredible years in history. As she said that 30 and 40, 50 years from now, people will be reading about this year in history books. Well, they probably won't be books, but through some sort of a medium. And she's 100% right. This year will be remembered as one of the most historic years in both U.S. and world history. We haven't even reached the midway part yet, and we have had a trial on the impeachment of the president, a worldwide pandemic that has quarantined the nation and has claimed over 100,000 lives, and we're still counting. An economic crisis that parallels the Great Depression, and unparalleled civil unrest and violence. And we still have a life-changing election to look forward to in November. And the question comes up, what about us who are living through this historic time? And maybe that seems like a strange question. What do you mean, what about us? Well, to tell you the truth, I must confess to you that most of my thoughts have been along the lines of, we just have to weather this storm and wait things out, right? I'll just hunker down till this virus settles down. Whatever is happening politically that I may find distasteful or even repugnant, I'll just have to wait things out. And when the violence started to break out a couple of weeks ago, a good chunk of my brain was in that place of being sure to steer clear of the areas that were in turmoil until this whole thing passes over. And as I said, these thoughts and other similar thoughts occupied a fair amount of my thinking. And why not? Isn't it natural, rightful even, to think along the lines of what is safe for me and my loved ones? And the answer, of course, is, well, yeah, sure. But again, this is the single most historic time in our lifetimes. And the question comes up, are we to be spectators to this history in the making, or are we to be participants in the making of history? Are we supposed to sit on the sidelines and act as extras in this drama? Or are we to be writers and players and take on leading prominent roles in determining what lies ahead for us? Our topic today is, for they know not what they do. And this, of course, is the second half of the sentence that Jesus, our way shower, speaks as he is dying. The first part of that sentence is, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. And this makes sense. All of us at one time or another does something wrong or fall short in some way out of ignorance or out of innocence. When I was a young child back in elementary school, Catholic elementary school, we were taught all about sin. There were venial sins and there were mortal sins. Venial sins were more or less the little things, what I like to call the oops, my bad things, that all of us do from time to time. Mortal sins, though, well, that was different. Those were the biggies. The real serious offenses, the real serious missteps. And of course, the church provided a list of things that fell into that, what consisted of being a mortal sin, things that could be placed in that category. But there always was an important component that was necessary for something to be such a serious sin that you were going to be hellbound. And that is, you had to be consciously aware of the seriousness of what it was that you were about to do. And then you decided to do it anyway. So back in those days, that list of things that were mortal sins, there was eating meat on Friday was right on that list. Eating meat on Friday was a serious no-no. But if you truly forgot, it was not a mortal sin. And I take you through this catechism lesson from my childhood upbringing for a reason. And it goes back to our theme for the day, for they know not what they do. Because this is directly related to my earlier question. As we live in the midst of a worldwide pandemic, an economic depression, political turmoil, blatant civil rights violations, and civil unrest across virtually every major city throughout our nation, we are going to be defined as a society, as a people, as a nation, as a church family, and as individuals. Because what is going on now is so big, so dramatic, so news blanketed, that it is virtually inescapable. I do not know how anyone cannot realize and feel the sense of brokenness that exists in so many of us these days, and that we are in such a serious, serious need of healing. Oh, we can pretend. We can tell ourselves that all of that bad stuff is happening out there somewhere. We can say that the protests, the rioting, and the looting is all happening in downtown Chicago and other central areas of cities throughout the country. But then we double lock our doors before going to sleep at night. We can convince ourselves that the virus is mainly in places like nursing homes, and among poor people. So there's no reason not to have baseball this summer. We can watch a video of an African-American dying of asphyxiation in the street while a knee of an officer is pressed upon his throat. And we can disassociate ourselves from it if we really try. Jesus told Peter, before the cock crows, you will deny me three times. And Jesus says, not me, Lord. No way. It's not going to happen to me. But when Peter comes face to face with his fears, he perhaps, understandably, denies that he had anything to do with Jesus. Never saw him before in my life. I don't know what you're talking about. He then has to suffer the pain of his remorse when he realizes the magnitude of what he did. Going back to that example of eating meat on Friday being a mortal sin, one easily could forget it was Friday. But pretending you forgot it was Friday was even worse. A lot of this was good old-fashioned Catholic guilt, no doubt about it. But most of it brought forth an inner knowing that you had denied that light, that inner light that we refer to as the Christ. We never could have expressed it in such language back then, but we felt the separation deep in our hearts and minds and souls. For they know not what they do. We often do not know what we do because we are in a place of complacency or apathy. The night before his death, Jesus asked his apostles to stay awake and be present with him as he prayed. And three times he finds them fast asleep. And each time he is growingly more frustrated with them and gives them a really? Or you guys got to be kidding. But we do this all of the time. As Jesus said, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. I remember during my freshman year in high school, a good friend of mine from the neighborhood attended the same school that I did, Holy Trinity. He took the entrance exams and scored way near the top and was placed in the honors track. I knew him very well because we had hung around together for years growing up. He was brilliant in street sense in every other way. But that freshman year in high school, during the first semester, he broke a record and established a record that I'm willing to bet still stands today. And it wasn't a great record of accomplishment. He was registered for 7 classes that first semester, and he managed to pull together and get 6 Fs and a D. And the D was in gym. And I remember asking him, Joe, what the hell are you doing? And he answered me with a shrug, and he said, I don't know. I just don't care. We are not born apathetic or complacent. Apathy and complacency are learned tools. They are learned skills. And they may well be inspired by early life experiences. They may even be understandable as people are scorned growing up. People are ignored early on. People are shamed. People are discouraged from trying. People have had their enthusiasm and innocence stepped on and ridiculed. The story about my friend Joe was sad, not because he was judged academically, but more so because he was labeled as a failure as a human being. The story of my friend does not have a happy ending. Joe dropped out of high school altogether, and 5 years later, he died of a heroin overdose. lots of pain to go around, and lots of fingers that could be pointed, and lots of blame to be forgiven for people who knew not what they had done. The really fascinating thing about Jesus's words is that his entire ministry was based upon bringing a new consciousness into the world. The good news of the Gospels may be that it's time to be all about love, but there's a deeper, more fuller, more complete message to Jesus' ministry. Wake up! It's all about love. The Gospel stories tell us of the frustration that Jesus had, even with his closest disciples, because after being with them for years, they simply did not get it. Innocence and ignorance, of course, are not the same. And there's even a larger gap between natural ignorance and learned ignorance. Learned ignorance is born of fear, apathy, and complacency. Learned ignorance is ignorance intended to make things easier for us. Learned ignorance is pretending that we had forgotten that today is Friday. Learned ignorance does not qualify for the exemption that Jesus set up when he said, "For they know not what they do." There is a world of difference between turning the other cheek and looking the other way. And when I was growing up, one of the more difficult things for me to hear coming out of the mouth of my mom was, "Not Michael, you messed up. Michael, you should have known better." So what does all of this have to do with the crazy world in which we're now living and everything that is going on these days? Well, in the middle of it all, I believe a new consciousness has been born. I believe that spirit is alive and well and becoming more visible with each passing day. The Spirit of God is no longer caged and buried in people's hearts. It is being manifested. And I believe that the recent events have lessened the number of those who know not what they do. A few days ago, the commissioner of the National Football League, Roger Goodell, issued a statement of public apology for how they had managed protests by quarterback Colin Kaepernick and other African American players. He said, "We got it wrong." And earlier in the week, a star quarterback, Drew Brees, issued a statement in which he basically said he always would be opposed to any demonstrations, even peaceful ones, that were deemed to be disrespectful toward the flag. And he received so much negative pushback for his statement, so much criticism for his remarks by his fellow football players and by his own teammates, that he too ended up publicly apologizing for his words and his lack of sensitivity. Friends, these are open manifestations of a great magnitude, manifestations of an incredible new awareness. I really see it as being more significant than physically moving a mountain. When the smoke finally clears, will there be backsliding? Could well be. At my ripe old age, I often look back and wonder, whatever happened to all of that idealism that we shared in the 60s and the 70s? Is this the end of racism in America? Not very likely. We heard just a few days ago from our political leaders that the best remedy for racism is a strong economy. Yeah, that'll work. Let's just get all of the minorities and poor people back to getting minimum wage as they were before the pandemic, and everything will be fine. It just shows that there remains work to be done. This newborn awareness that we see, that we witness today, is going to have to be nurtured and cared for and honored and respected so it can grow up big and strong and healthy. I have no specific suggestions to offer to you as to what is yours to do. Should you be marching? Your call. Should you be protesting? Up to you. Should you be writing letters? Should you be making contributions to your favorite candidates? Should you publicly express your feelings in those uncomfortable settings? Nobody can answer any such things for anybody, with one maybe exception. Should you vote in November? Yeah, that's really important. In unity, we always bring it home to a personal level. Be the change you want the world to be, right? If you pray and listen with a real hunger for what is yours to do, you will get answers. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be satisfied. It may be in prayer will not direct you to any world event. Maybe what you will hear in prayer is that it's time for you to forgive someone who really hurt you at some point in your life. Maybe it's time to consider that they really did not know what they were doing. Maybe you will hear that it's time for you to accept and love yourself. Maybe you will hear that it's time to forgive yourself. Maybe you will hear that you need to look in the mirror and see something incredibly beautiful and not something that falls short. And maybe you will hear that the time has come for you to claim your divine inheritance as a beloved daughter or son of God. Maybe you will hear that it's time to quit hiding. Maybe you will hear that you are so loved that it's time to stop interpreting what you hear through those old lenses. And maybe it's time for you to own that you do know what you are doing. Maybe it's time for you to quit pretending that you forgot it was Friday. And with that, we want to take this into prayer and meditation.